I want to make one thing clear before we get into the message this morning. Kevin tried to paint he and I in the same category. I'm 53. He is over 60. So that's little difference. I just felt like that needed to be shared. Not quite, haven't quite made it to his level of wisdom, understanding, and balance. Sorry, Kev. You kind of had that one coming, buddy. We kicked off this new series in Psalm 23 last week. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet or still waters. And we talked about how the sheep only need to know the shepherd. The shepherd has to know all of the secrets of the desert, right? The shepherd has to know where the water is and where the food is, where the predators are. He's got to provide. He's got to protect for the sheep. All the sheep have to do is follow the shepherd. We went on then into verse 2, how God the shepherd leads us beside quiet waters, and or leads us to green meadows and beside quiet waters. And I want to, like, we talked a lot about that, but I want to revisit a little bit of verse 2 today. Because over the years, I was thinking about those two lines in verse 2. Over the years, preachers have had this thing. If you've been around church for a long time, there was this thing called the preacher's prerogative. And it wasn't a Bobby Brown song. It was really about how preachers sometimes have the tendency to stretch things, like their fish stories, right? It was this big. It caught it and it was this big. And so there's a fish story from Psalm 23, verse 2, where it says, he makes me lie down in green pastures. And so myself and lots of other preachers around the world, researching that passage a little bit, came across a story. And it sounded really good. It was a story about how ancient shepherds, if they had a wayward sheep, that just wouldn't stay with the flock, they would lovingly break one of the legs of the sheep so that it would stay there, and then the shepherd would have to provide and protect for that sheep, very special, have to take care of it. And then when the leg healed, the sheep stayed with the flock because it had learned to trust and stay with the shepherd because the shepherd provided everything it needed. Now, just keep that thought in your head. When Jesus came and walked the earth, he told this story about how the good shepherd knows his sheep. And if he's bringing his sheep into the pen and he's got 100 sheep and he counts them as they come in at night and only 99 are in there, he goes looking for the one. You remember that story? He goes looking for the one sheep that's lost. And when he finds it, he's excited and he pulls it out of whatever it's in and he puts it up on his shoulders. And as he's walking back to the pen with this lost sheep, is this beautiful picture. He gently reaches up and then violently snaps the leg of the sheep. Makes no sense, people. Think about this. The shepherd like David is talking about a shepherd who lives in the desert and has to take his sheep to little bits of grass and places of water. And sometimes they gotta walk for a long way to find those places in the midst of the desert. What shepherd wants to break the leg of a sheep and then carry it around in 100 degree weather all the time until its leg is healed? And how does he know that leg isn't gonna get infected, there's not gonna be a problem? And besides leading all of the sheep and then caring for this one that he's lovingly broken the leg of, now when he gets there, the sheep can't do anything else because he has to get food and bring it to the sheep. He has to get water and bring it. And then he's got to take care of the 99 as well. Like, it's a good story. Like, preachers would say, well, that'll preach. The problem is, it's not true at all. There is no biblical or historical reference for a shepherd ever breaking the leg of a sheep on purpose to help it stay with the flock. So I remember years ago in the first church that I pastored, finding that story and going, oh, that's pretty interesting. I was young and dumb back then. I was younger and dumber back then. And so I remember sharing that story. And so you're not the people I shared that story with, but I'm sorry. Because that's not a true story. Not a true story at all. But think about the context of what Jesus was saying. The shepherd is bringing his sheep in at night into the pen. He finds that one is missing. And so he goes looking for that sheep. It's actually a pretty rational thing, because remember I said last week that sheep just aren't good at protecting themselves or avoiding like common dangers that they might get. Like sheep are just kind of dumb. They get caught in a lot of things. So the sheep that the good shepherd goes looking for, that one sheep, probably hasn't abandoned the fold, probably hasn't wandered off necessarily on purpose, but probably got stuck. Got stuck in a thicket trying to get something to eat, fell in a hole. It was a very common thing, or off the side of a ledge somewhere, or got waterlogged while it was trying to drink and got stuck in the water. What I'm trying to say is that the sheep that is missing from the fold fell into a situation that kept it from coming when called. The sheep wanted to come, but it couldn't. And Jesus, the good shepherd, then goes looking for that sheep, because that sheep didn't abandon the shepherd. He just couldn't come for some reason. The person that Jesus goes looking for is the person that got caught up in something. Sex, drugs, rock and roll. Fill in whatever vice you want to insert there. And while whatever initial action got them stuck maybe wasn't on purpose, they didn't intend to get caught up in that, to get stuck in that. They were just trying to find something. And they veered off the path. They went somewhere they shouldn't. They separated from the shepherd a little bit. Again, not necessarily because they wanted to abandon the shepherd, but because there was something there that drew them, and they didn't intend to get stuck. It wasn't on purpose. In fact, you think about this. If you've ever been stuck in your life in something that you didn't intend to get stuck in, you'd give anything to get out of it, right? You just can't do it on your own. And I think that's why Jesus tells a story. He says, look, I'm going to go look for that sheep who didn't intend to get into that, whatever it was. He didn't intend to get sucked into that, but for whatever reason, it happened. And now I'm going to go and I'm going to find him. I'm going to help him get unstuck. Because the reality is, when you get stuck in something like that in your life, you can't get unstuck on your own. You've got to have help. You got to have help. I think that's one of the things that happens in the church when we get to know each other and we do life together is when we get stuck and when we get off course a little bit, there are other people there to help bring us back. I read something years ago that said the issue with addiction is really relationship. And people coming out of addiction, the greater the relationships that they have around them as they're coming out of that, the greater success they will have in staying sober. You think about it this way. We're given this idea that every person that goes into the hospital that is given medication like Oxy or whatever gets addicted to that and then can't get off. And so we monitor that. We look at it. The doctors are careful about who they give it to and how much they give it. Andrea is actually going through that right now in pain, but they have lowered or slowed the amount of oxy that she can take because of that pain, because they don't want her to get addicted. But the reality is most people who go into the hospital and get big drugs to help with the pain do not ever become addicted to those things. Why? Maybe, as the study said, it's because there's relationship there. They don't need that thing because they have these people. Jesus says, look, you can't do it on your own, so I'm going to help you. And I'm going to help bring you back to the fold. The point is that Jesus doesn't make us lie down by force. We lie down because we're fulfilled. Because we have what we need. We lie down in green pastures because we're protected and we're provided. Because the shepherd has brought us to everything we need. Because it's pleasant to be there. And so we lie down in comfort. And I think really, this is the whole idea of the concept of Sabbath in the Bible. We read about it first in the Old Testament, and certainly it continues into the New Testament, this day of rest. And for the ancient Jews, like even today, if you're in Israel, modern day Israel today, at about sundown on Friday, everything shuts down. Every store shuts down, the streets clear out, nobody is there until evening of Saturday, because it's their Sabbath. They're commanded to do that. And there weren't just weekly Sabbaths, there were yearly Sabbaths. And all of this rest that was built into the Israelite lifestyle. But the people weren't forced to rest. God just promised to provide everything that they needed if they did rest, if they trusted him. They could rest. And they rested not because everything was done. Nobody like gets everything done and then takes a Sabbath or then takes a day of rest. They rest because they need to be reminded, I can't do it all on my own anyway. The idea of Sabbath is not hurry up and work all week so you can get everything done so that you can take a break. The idea of Sabbath is, even if I have stuff that's undone, I can rest in God because I trust him to provide for me. Now, that is not the way of the world, right? The way of the world says work 7 days a week, work long hours, because at some point in the future, you might be able to rest a little bit. Get everything done, and once everything is done, then you can take a breath. It's where the saying comes from, I can sleep when I'm dead. But it doesn't work that way, does it? Look, rest is not just about refusing to do things. It's about recognizing that we can't do anything. That ultimately, God is in control. We can't do everything there is to do. Psalm 23:2 goes on to say, he leads me beside quiet waters. If David did, in fact, write this psalm, 23rd psalm, while he was fleeing his son Absalom, who was trying to stage a coup and force him out as king and become king himself. If he was on the run, he would have once again been sleeping on the desert floor, both as he did as a child tending his father's sheep, but also he did it for many years running away from King Saul, another jealous king who was out to keep him from coming to the throne. And now he's running away from a jealous would-be king who's trying to kick David out of his throne. The Midrash, the ancient Jewish commentary on the Old Testament, makes an interesting connection between this portion of Psalm 23, the second half of verse 2, and the Old Testament story of the Exodus, as God leads his people out of Egypt in the desert for 40 years before they come into the promised land. And the correlation is this. Moses strikes the rock early on in the Exodus story. He strikes this huge rock in Horeb. In fact, if you Google it, you can find a rock, a huge, like enormous rock, the Rock of Horeb. It's incredibly big, and it is split down the middle into two halves almost perfectly. And if you look at the inside of that rock where it's been cleaved in two, you'd find that the edges are worn like water came out of the rock. It's really kind of wild. So the Midrash, this ancient Jewish commentary, connects Psalm 23, leads me to green pastures and quiet waters, and it connects that to the Exodus story and the rock of Horeb. And the water that came out of the rock of Horeb, it does two things for the Israelite people as they wandered in the desert. First, it provided water in the desert for 40 years. Sometimes we read that story and we think, oh, the water came out of the rock is really cool, and it made a little bit of a lake right there, and they drank from it, and then they walked on. No, the Bible really tells us that the water that came out of the rock of Horeb followed. And in fact, Paul in 1 Corinthians 10 metaphorically says that the water followed Israel in the desert. And the idea is that the water that came out of the rock, it created a river in the desert. And that river in the desert flowed where the Israelites went, or maybe the Israelites went where the water of that river flowed. But it was with them for 40 years. It wasn't just a one-time event. So they had water in the desert all the time, just like they had manna and just like they had quail. It's really an amazing story. But what happens where there is water in the desert, where everything is dead? What happens to the land around that water? It produces vegetation and animal life. And so the Israelites, as they wandered through the desert, they had this river that went with them that kind of followed them for 40 years in the desert. And it not only provided water, but herbs and flowers and plants grew up on the banks of this river, and animal life was there. It was this whole big, like, it's huge thing. And we gloss over it when we read the story of Exodus. And so David is trying to sleep on the desert floor. And he's in fear for his life from his son and whoever else might find him. And he remembers this story about this ancient Israelites wandering in this very same desert, and how God provided water and vegetation and animal life for them. And they slept on the desert floor in fear of the nations around them that might attack them. But they had what they needed because God provided and protected them. And he was reminded that even in the desert, God can provide a place and a time of rest and peace and refreshing. And the reality is that that's true for you and me too. When we remember what God has done in the past, we can believe that he can do it again in the present. When we remember the things that God has done in the past, we can be reminded, like, hey, if God did it back then, maybe he'll do it again. And as David lay in the dust of the dirt that night, he thought about the water that followed the Israelites and provided green pasture and quiet waters and rest for the people of Israel, and he needed that rest as well. No matter how thirsty or tired or hungry you are, God promises water that never runs out and food for strength. But you won't find it wandering in the desert. you're not just going to happen upon that. In fact, if you didn't know, the Old Testament is full of stories of people who get stuck in the desert and who are crying out to God because they don't know if they're going to survive. And God says something really interesting almost every time. He says, "Lift up your eyes." And when they lift their eyes up, they see what they need: water. Food. It was right there all along, and they missed it. You're not going to find it on your own, but you will find it if you follow the shepherd. He's the only one who knows where to go. Now let's jump into Psalm chapter 3, because David then goes on to say, not only does the shepherd lead us to green pastures and beside quiet waters, but he restores our soul. Now, if I'm driving my wife's car, which I get to do quite often now, because she can't drive at all. So I get to drive her car a lot. And if I'm driving her car and I am, you know, I don't know if you know this about me, but I get distracted. And so I'm driving down the road and I look at things around, you know, like, oh, what's that? And my wife, bless her heart, she misses stuff. We were driving down Haverhill Road this morning and I said, oh, look, a white turkey. It's not an everyday sight. I mean, maybe it is for you. I don't see white turkeys all the time. Oh, look, a white turkey. And by the time she figured out where I was pointing and what I was looking at, we're past it. It didn't matter. That happens a lot. Because I'm distracted and I'm just looking at things. Oh, this is a hawk and there's this and there's that and whatever. So if I'm distracted and I'm driving my wife's car, which is really irritating to me, it dings. Does your car do this? It dings and a screen comes up. You know, cars today, they don't have dashboards like they did back in the like speedometer and all this. It's a screen, computer screen. And so it dings and this picture comes up on the dashboard screen and it says, consider taking a rest or having a cup of coffee. Thanks, Hyundai. Anyway, I laugh and I put on, but here's the point. When we're tired, we rest. And when we're hungry, we eat. And when we're thirsty, we find something to drink. And when we're distracted, we can get up and take a break and do something else and shake it up and then come back and focus again. We know what to do to restore our physical bodies. And there are tons of podcasts and things you can read online that will help you know how to restore your body. We can do that pretty easily, but we cannot restore our soul. We are incapable of restoring that which is in the depths of who we are. When we're wounded deeply, a nap won't cut it. And if you've been wounded deeply, just depressed, you know a nap won't cut it because all you want to do is sleep and you wake up with the same pain you had when you went to bed. When you've been hurt, no amount of food will satisfy, and we know that because sometimes we eat when we're stressed and we're hurt and we consume and then we feel worse than we did to begin with. When we've been abused, all the water in the ocean can't wash away that pain. We can't restore our soul, but God can. He's able to do that. We can't restore our soul on our own. Jesus said, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Learn from me, for I'm gentle and lowly or humble in heart. And you'll find rest, not physical rest, rest for your soul. That deep, restorative rest, because he says, my yoke is easy, my burden is light. And man, that sounds good sometimes when we're weighed down from the world and the pain of life. You see, when we've been hurt, it eats us up from the inside out. Unless we learn to let that go. And the way that we let that hurt and pain go is hard, but it's forgiveness. Only we can't forgive on our own. Maybe you've tried to forgive somebody for something they've done. You said, okay, I'm going to forgive you. Here's how you know you've done it on your own and without God, because a week later, it comes back up and you're mad again. You can't really forgive somebody if you're angry all the time about the thing that you supposedly forgave them from. We can't forgive on our own. God can give us the grace to forgive others as he's forgiven us. That's the point of forgiveness. We're to remember the hurt that we've caused God, and then because we have caused God such grievous hurt, we can forgive others because the hurt they've caused us isn't as bad as the hurt we've caused God, and he's forgiven us. And it's this really weird kind of thing that works inside of us, that the way to freedom in our lives, in our soul, is to let go of the things that cause us pain. Only we can't let go of them ourselves. It's not in our nature. Only God can forgive through us as we forgive others like he's forgiven us. Then he does this work in us. And he restores our soul. When we release the pain and the fear and the anger and the hurt and the bitterness, it's we who are freed, not the other person. God says, look, like part of this forgiveness thing is that we trust, this is what Psalm 23, David is talking about, that we trust God to take care of the things that we can't take care of anyway. We trust God, I trust that you're going to handle that situation, and so I can forgive them because I know you are going to handle it. And if you choose to forgive them, that's on you, it's not on me. And the only way to be free and to find rest in our soul is to follow God in that pattern of forgiveness. When he's restored our soul through that forgiveness, and he's brought peace in the midst of our pain, then we can keep following him. And the next part of verse 3 says that he leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. David says that God, our good shepherd, leads us in paths of righteousness. And probably most of us think that that means leads us to do the right thing. If I follow God, he's going to lead me to do the right thing. And maybe some of you are sitting there thinking, if I follow God, he leads me in paths of righteousness. What that means is he leads me to boring things. That's what we sometimes think about church. Like, oh, you're a church person. Life must be pretty boring for you. You can't do anything, right? You know, you don't drink, you don't smoke. What do you do? Your life's pretty boring. You just read the Bible all the time, and that's it in your life. I don't think that's what David is saying when he says that he leads me in paths of righteousness. See, a righteous path is one that leads you to the right place. A righteous path is one that leads you to the right place. And look, I've been gone for 3 weeks. Last Sunday, hopefully I didn't offend anybody. It's probably time, so get ready. Because I just want to get personal and I want to get real for just a moment. And I want you to consider your own life and where you are in your life, this place right now. And then ask yourself this question, is this where I intended to be 5 or 10 years ago? Whatever stuff you're in right now, whatever's going on in your life right now, is this where you intended to be 5 or 10 years ago? If you're not where you thought you were gonna be at this point in your life, why? Did you get caught up in the wrong crowd? Did you make a poor financial investment and life got off track a little bit? Did you marry for what you thought was love only to find out that it's not love? And where you thought you were gonna be now is far off from where you actually are, and you're wondering if you'll ever make it back there again. And so what do we do when where we are is far away from where we thought we would be? We have to do something to reconcile things in our mind and to find peace in our life. And when life doesn't add up the way we thought it was, we've got to do something to make it right in our head, to make this place that we're in, that's where, not where we thought we'd be, sound better than it is, or be better than it is. Most of us, look, most of us are not exactly where we thought we'd be, but we're in the general area of where we thought we'd be. Some people that are just completely off course. And they got off course a long time ago. And instead of getting back to that place, we've just decided that this is the course now. This is where we're going to go. This is the way things are. And so what we do to kind of reconcile all this in our minds is we say this cool thing, to quote Kevin, it's this hip thing that we say to ourselves to make us feel good about where we're at. And we say something like this: well, if I hadn't made that mistake, if I hadn't chosen that path, if I hadn't done that thing, I wouldn't be the person I am today. We probably all said that at some point in our life. Well, if that wouldn't happen, that was a terrible thing, it was a mistake, but if I didn't make that terrible mistake, I wouldn't be the person that I am today. And I want to tell you that that's true. You wouldn't, without whatever bad stuff, off the path, things that you've done, you would not be the person today that you are because of those things that happened. But it's also true to say that if you had avoided those things, if you'd stayed on the path, if you wouldn't have gone after that, if you wouldn't have made that choice, you may have avoided a lot of heartache and trouble along the way. And we try to justify this place that we're in by saying, well, everything in my past led me to this place, and you're absolutely right, it did. But if you had never gotten off the path, your life might be completely different and maybe completely better than it is right now. That may be, I recognize that may be tough to hear. Because we often try to want to use our past as a badge of honor and say, like, I intended to be here, and look at what I've overcome, and look at what I've been able to get out of. But consider David, who was in the same place. It was his fault that he was out in the desert once again, sleeping in the dust. It was his fault. And he doesn't say, well, the things that I did and the choices I made with Absalom, my son, with Bathsheba and whatever, they brought me, they made me the person I am today. No, he says, God, you can restore my soul. You can lead me to paths of righteousness. You can lead me by quiet waters and green pastures, because if I follow myself, I'm never going to find that peace in my soul. Look, every path leads to a place. Every path that you and I are on, it leads to a place. And some of those places are good for us and they're beneficial, and God's going to use those to do great things. And other places and paths, they're not. They're not good for you. It's not beneficial for you. Some of those paths might lead you to a different destination, but it's in the same direction. Well, I didn't thought I'd be here, but I thought I'd be, you know, in the area. And God just, you know, worked things around and got me to this place. And other paths that we're on take us to places we never wanted to go and never thought that we'd be. And we find ourselves like that sheep that Jesus goes after because it's caught in something that it can't get out of on its own. When you follow the shepherd, he leads you to paths that get you to where you need to be. The paths that lead you to food and water and rest for your soul. And he does that, David says, for his name's sake. So look at the last part of verse 3. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Now, God doesn't provide and protect for you and I. If you missed it, you and I are the sheep in the story that David's talking about. God is the good shepherd. Jesus is our shepherd, and we are the sheep. And so God doesn't provide and protect and lead us as sheep because we're so obedient and good. Right? He doesn't do that because we're so good. He's like, ooh, I want to lead those sheep because they always listen and follow me and do what I want. No, that's not it. God does this because he loves us, because we're his sheep. But he also does it because he's the good shepherd. It's his name on the line. Look, if our good shepherd can't provide and protect his sheep and lead us through valleys safely, then he's not a good shepherd. Think about what that means. Yes, God loves you. Absolutely, he loves you despite what you've done, what you're gonna do, whatever. God absolutely loves you. But he leads you to good things in your life, not because of who you are, but because of who he is. Because he's the good shepherd. Like, look, we are not entitled to God's wisdom, his understanding. We are not entitled to the knowledge of the right paths. We are not entitled to anything that comes into our lives from God. He leads us, not because we are lovely, but because he loves us. That's just who he is, because he's the good shepherd. For his name's sake, he leads us to green pastures and quiet waters. Because of who he is, he restores our souls. Because of who he is, he leads us and puts us on paths that lead us to the right places. I think about what that means. Let's go back to David. David had an affair with Bathsheba. God had given him everything he could ever have wanted. And then he had an affair with Bathsheba. Then he has her husband murdered. Then he has a child. He breaks God's laws, and he does that over and over again. He refused to discipline his son Absalom. There's a whole story in Samuel about the things that Absalom is doing, and David is not handling that well. David is not a very good father to his son Absalom. Yet it's David who writes this prayer. And the prayer teaches us something about the shepherd. And I think it's this: your past doesn't matter. Your ability to follow doesn't matter. Your tendency to chase rainbows doesn't matter. Whatever thicket you're stuck in, whatever hole you've fallen into, doesn't matter. At whatever point along the desert of your life you look to the shepherd, he will always lead you from where you are to where you need to be. Whatever point in your life, whatever's going on, and whatever place you're caught or you're stuck, he will always lead you from where you are to where you need to be, because that's who he is. What I'm saying to you today is this: follow the shepherd. You may not want to follow because you know the things you've done in your past. You're like, well, the good shepherd could never want me as a part of his flock because I know the things that I've done. But he's not concerned about that. Like he wants to lead you away from badder things and towards better things. You may not want to follow because you don't know if you can trust the shepherd or not. I've fallen victim and prayed to other people before, and I just don't know if I could trust him to lead me where I want to go. And I just want to tell you, like, he's the only one who knows the way. You may not want to trust him, but you don't have a lot of choice, because you're not going to find that rest for your soul anywhere else. And so if you're ready to follow the shepherd, we're ready to help you do that. When Aaron's done sharing some announcement, there's going to be a QR code up on the screen. And if you use the camera on your phone and you zoom in on that, it'll lead you to a website and ask you some questions and things. And if you follow that process, we will help you take your next steps in the right path that's going to lead you to the right places. Let's pray. God, thanks for loving us. Thank you for loving us in spite of ourselves. And God, for those of us who have followed wrong paths and done wrong things and gotten off and stuck and in holes that we cannot get ourselves out of, God, help us to trust that you're not going to stand at the top of that hole and point a finger at us and tell us all the reasons why we shouldn't have fallen in there. You're just going to reach down and pull us out. And then you're going to lead us to the paths that take us to the good places, where the food and the water is, where we can find rest and peace because we found you. And so God, help us to follow you this week. Maybe there's somebody here that's never actually made the decision to have you as their good shepherd, to pledge allegiance to you as not just the shepherd, but our shepherd king. And so, Father, if that's where somebody is today, would you bring them along and let us help bring them to the right place. Bless us as we do that this week in Jesus' name. Amen. So David laid out this beautiful picture of the shepherd in Psalm 23:1, 2, and 3. And he leads us and he guides us and he restores our soul. And it's all about the good shepherd. But next Sunday, we're going to switch from all these things that God is doing for us and leading us in the right places. And we're going to switch and look at what happens when we choose to go where we want to go. And I think we're going to learn that the good shepherd just doesn't always lead us to the good places. But when we get off the path, he never abandons us either. So we'll talk about that next week.